The next case, number 23-1060, Crest Stores of Puerto Rico Incorporated et al. Versus Walmart Puerto Rico Incorporated et al. At this time, would counsel for the appellants Crest Stores et al. Please introduce themselves on the record.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Gretchen Alvarado González, on behalf of appellants, along with my colleagues Fernando Sabater and Luis Aldana. If I may, I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
You may have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Your Honors, this case belongs to the Commonwealth Courts of Puerto Rico, where it should have remained 4 years ago before Costco hijacked it into the federal system. It is of utmost importance to keep in mind the purpose of CAFA, which is to make sure that interstate class actions with national importance are litigated in the federal courts, and therefore intrastate class actions remain within the purview of the state and Commonwealth courts. In the context of the local controversy exception, we want to cite for the record Congressperson Sensenbrenner, who was the chairman of the Judiciary Committee of the House of Representatives, that said the following. The purpose of each of these criteria is to identify a truly local controversy, a controversy that uniquely affects a particular locality to the exclusion of all others. Your Honors, this is not an interstate case of national importance. On the contrary, this is a purely intrastate class action that does not affect multiple states. Why?
Can I ask you, let's assume that you are right that the local controversy exception should apply. One of the questions I have is about the joinder of the different defendants here. Is there any claim of concerted action among different so-called megastore defendants?
If I understood your question correctly about the joinder, I must point to the record, Your Honor, that was challenged by Costco in this case, and the district court denied that.
The district court denied it. Costco argues on appeal that was erroneous. You suggested that they waive that. They have not, as I understand the law. They're simply offering an alternative ground for affirming the judgment in their favor. So, is there any claim, as I asked a moment ago, of concerted action here?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Why is it proper, in your view, to join Costco and Walmart as both as defendants in the same case?
Well, Your Honor, because of economic reasons, the allegations made against defendants relates to the same laws. So we understand that it should be litigated jointly. And we understand that they are jointly defendants.
You can't separate out the causation of loss as between defendants, as you do.
Yes, Your Honor, we can. However, again, because of economic reasons, if a state court were to...
What do you mean economic reasons?
Well, it's more economic for our clients, Your Honor, and I may add that if the state court, if the case were severed, you will have state court litigating the case and a federal court also litigating the case. There can be a conflict between...
That can happen, and CAFA deals with that and strikes these compromises, and I understand you may well be entitled to litigate against Walmart in the Commonwealth courts. I don't understand why you're able to litigate against Costco.
Well, Your Honor, we understand that the local controversy exception, several exceptions apply, and that's why.
Well, that one probably does. So let's go with that.
Excuse me?
The local controversy exception, frankly, seems to apply. I'll be interested to hear what the defense has to say. Perhaps I'm wrong about that. But does that apply? Why are you entitled to litigate in Commonwealth Court against Costco?
Your Honor, as I was saying, congresspersons were very vocal regarding the exceptions. And when they were discussing that exception, they understood that even if there is a diverse defendant, that doesn't mean that the case should not be tried in state court.
If that person is properly defended in the same case, the citation is there to the legislative history just begging this question.
If you can repeat your question, Your Honor, because
I may be more argumentative than anything else, but I'm trying to understand the legitimate basis for joining Costco and Walmart as joint defendants when you don't allege they did anything jointly. Let me give you a hypothetical. I assume lots and lots of your clients also might have had potential claims against their insurance companies for so-called COVID interruption claims, right? Would it be reasonable, proper for a whole class of retail merchants to sue, in essence, every property and casualty insurer in sight all in one case to resolve those disputes?
Yes, Your Honor, we understand that they should be joined because of the controversies. Because this case relates to pure local law, it should be decided by a local court. Even Costco that it's a diverse defendant. Okay, as I was saying, Your Honor, this case is not of national importance. This is a purely a local case that has no effect across state lines. In this case, 100% of the plaintiffs are citizens of Puerto Rico, and the putative class members are also 100% Puerto Rican citizens. 3 out of 4 defendants are citizens of Puerto Rico when the case was filed and when it was removed to the federal courts. The conduct alleged against Costco, the diverse defendant, is related exclusively regarding its business in Puerto Rico. The amended complaint was filed pursuant to the laws of Puerto Rico. This case does not affect national commerce, and no similar class action has been filed in this case. Moreover, this case involves matters of Puerto Rican public policy. As you may know, this case relates to certain executive orders issued by former Governor Wanda Vasquez seeking the well-being of Puerto Rican citizens. The threat of a global pandemic. In light of the above, we understand that the local controversy exception applies. And for this exception to apply, 6 elements must be demonstrated. Out of those 6 elements, only 2 has been disputed by Walmart and Costco.
I want to interrupt. Is your argument regarding the home state exception that Walmart is a primary defendant?
We understand that, yes, Walmart is also a primary defendant.
So, and then what about Costco?
Well, I was talking about the local controversy exception, but going to the homestead exception, looking at the unambiguous language of CAFA, we understand that Walmart is a primary defendant because its potential liability is greater.
But counsel, if you look at the text of the statute, though, it says the primary defendant, so it envisions that there can be more than one. So why aren't they both primary defendants?
Well, Your Honor, according to the precedents in sister courts, when deciding if the homestead exception applies, one must look into the potential liability that each defendant had. And in this case, Walmart's potential liability is far greater than Costco or any other co-defendant whatsoever.
I think your opposing counsel argues that you didn't actually make that particular argument below. Is that correct? You argued more about the number of stores rather than...
Yes, Your Honor. We add to that. Because I was talking about the extrinsic evidence, the expert report demonstrated that Walmart's potential liability is greater. If we look in the amended complaint, again, Walmart's potential liability is greater. Why? Because in the amended complaint, it was alleged that the specific numbers that each co-defendant have in Puerto Rico and in how many municipalities. If this court were to make an inference that more stores equals more illegal sales, then Walmart's potential liability is greater. It was alleged that Walmart has more than 20 stores in different municipalities in Puerto Rico. Meanwhile, Costco only has 4 stores. And a local court would have known that this 4 stores are only located in the metropolitan area, Your Honors.
Is it your position that there can only be one primary defendant?
We understand that Walmart and Walgreens were primary defendants in this case because their potential liability was greater. In the case of Walgreens, it has more than 100 stores throughout Puerto Rico. There are more Walgreens stores in Puerto Rico than there are municipalities, Your Honor. Now, circling back to the local controversy exception, the only two elements that are being disputed by Costco and Walmart is the significant basis prong and the significant relief prong. As you may know, these elements were not defined by the legislator or by this court. So looking into its unambiguous language, it must be concluded that the local co-defendants are significant in this case because no one can state that the local defendants are peripheral or nominal defendants in this case. Costco and Walmart wants this or invites this court to make a comparative approach between the allegations made by local merchants against the local defendants and against Costco. However, not all circuits have followed this comparative approach. And even if this court were to make that comparative approach, then you can see that there are more allegations against the local defendants.
Can I ask you to distinguish between the so-called different sorts of comparative approaches? At least from my reading of the case law, the statute does not say from whom the most significant is called, or whose conduct forms the most significant basis. Yet, there's some comparison is necessary. There is some evaluation, but I just don't. The defense, I understood to be arguing the superlative form of. I don't see that there. And so, are we okay, as far as you're concerned, doing some comparison as long as we understand there can be more than one significant relief can be sought from more than one?
Yes, Your Honor, we can proceed to that.
Your time is up. You do have 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. At this time, if counsel for Appley Costco could introduce himself on the record to begin.
Good morning, and may it please the court, Salvador Zanetti on behalf of Costco Wholesale Corporation. Your Honors, Costco respectfully requests the court affirm the judgment below. We have argued in our briefs and explained why we believe that the district court correctly exercised jurisdiction both under CAFA, and it would have been able also to do so under diversity jurisdiction. With respect to the motion for summary judgment itself, we also believe that the court reached the correct result for reasons that can be summarized as essentially the plaintiff's claim is reduced to one tort claim, which requires establishing that there was a duty that was breached by my client and that the breach of duty caused harm to plaintiffs. The evidence furnished in response to our motion for summary judgment did not create a genuine issue of fact that would require a jury trial on any of those issues. The most important one is a legal question. Plaintiffs did not establish a legal duty on the part of either defendant Eppley here. Specifically, this case turns on four executive orders exactly during a 72-day period starting on March 15, 2020 and ending on May 26, 2020. None of those executive
orders. Can I just direct you to that duty question,
yes,
which seems critical here? Why isn't there a duty to avoid unfair competition? I understand your argument why the EOs didn't require what plaintiff's counsel says they required, but turning to the unfair competition point, why isn't there a duty to avoid unfair competition?
Well, there is a statute that involves, but it doesn't have that much content in the sense that there is no case law in Puerto Rico. There's a regulation that does attempt to provide that context, and I might explain. The Puerto Rico Antitrust Act of 1964, Act 77 of 1964, lumps together what the U.S. government would be in several different statutes, from the Sherman Act, like to that, et cetera, and includes unfair competition. As the Puerto Rico Supreme Court found, however, a few years ago, the specific issue of unfair competition was delegated to the Antitrust Office of the Puerto Rico Department of Justice. And the statute expressly delegates to that office the adoption of a regulation that would give content to that general provision. And there's no guidance in the statute about what unfair competition means, except, and therefore, the only guidance is provided through the regulation adopted. That regulation does not provide any guidance that would allow a court to defer a duty in this case. And the word unfair cannot
be. Why is the fact that there's somebody, a governmental entity, who can enforce that particular statute, well, why does that mean that in the context of a tort claim, that a duty doesn't exist? I think there are cases from Puerto Rico Supreme Court where they've allowed unfair competition claims as part of a tort claim.
I'm aware of that case. That's the Yepin case, I litigated that case. I think that the court, what it said in that case was that they could not rule out the possibility that a plaintiff could allege a set of facts that would give rise to a claim, a tort claim, akin to that of a statutory claim under the Act. But it's not a claim under the Act itself. So it did not provide any further guidance from that, and there has been no case law beyond that point. We would also submit, Your Honor, that again, there has to be a duty. In other words, what the statute provides is some sort of conduct defined previously, otherwise we would have a problem with due process in advance notice of what conduct is prescribed, particularly in a case like this where there's supposedly criminal conduct.
Counsel, why would that, I'm just
sure
struggling to understand that, because, and you're right, the claim here is not under Law 77, it's under Article 1802, which mm-hmm. is a general tort claim, and
yes,
there's the tort of negligence, and there's no statutory definition of what exactly qualifies as negligence. It depends on the facts of the case. So, again, why, given that there is a general prohibition on unfair competition, why in the context of a tort case under Article 1802 can't somebody say, well, here, the tort was unfair competition?
Well, because what would be unfair about it? After all, parties are engaged, it has to be something.
That's the question of whether there's a breach. You started off with there's no duty, and I'm asking you, why is there no duty to avoid unfair competition?
I guess I understand your point. I guess these are two sides of the same coin. After all, if there is no duty, beyond a general duty not to compete unfairly, rather, what does it mean in a particular case? What is the, we would posit implicitly here again, and it sort of merges into the analysis of what is actually a breach. But conduct cannot be described, we posit, as unfair unless it is actually breaching some sort of guideline or rule or duty that establishes what should have been the conduct. And here there is no such thing except this very generic assertion that it must be fair. But there is no case law in Puerto Rico interpreting the statute anywhere near that broadly. In fact, the only incidents in which the statute has been interpreted always refer to the regulation, and the regulation does have specific types of conduct. It doesn't include this, it doesn't allow, it doesn't prevent us from selling. And this is the problem. The conduct here was simply selling products that we were allowed to sell when our stores were open. And unless there's any kind of indication that we were not allowed to do so, then it is entirely speculative and untethered to the statutory text of Act 77, as well as of the executive orders, to say that somehow that there was an implicit duty that we breached by engaging in sales otherwise allowed. By the way, I want to point out the executive orders, and I do want to emphasize this, and we point this out, it's also pointed out in the briefs, the executive orders do know how to prescribe specific conduct. For example, pawn shops were specifically told, no, you can't sell anything, but you can provide financing. But you can open and receive public. And there were other examples such as that. So we don't think it's accidental. There is a clear statutory, textual, may I finish my answer? There's a clear textual limitation here in plaintiff's claim, and simply asserting that it seems unfair to them, it does not bridge the gap, between the very general language of Act 77 and the conduct alleged here.
Counsel, I'd like to ask you about the procedural angle.
Yes.
Assume for a moment that the local controversy exception should apply. You've argued you were improperly joined. I'm trying to figure out if I were to agree with you on that point, I'm trying to figure out how we might sort this out. And that would seem to call for us to say that the district court was wrong to deny your motion to sever. At least that error becomes particularly clear if we think that the local controversy exception should apply to the claims against Walmart, but not to you. Could we say that this was an abuse of discretion, and on what basis to deny severance?
We briefed that on pages 27 to 29 of our brief, but I can elaborate a little bit further. I do want to say, however, before I can give up my hold on the local controversy exception issue, the Fifth Circuit just recently ruled, I think a couple weeks ago, the local controversy exception and the home state exceptions are not jurisdictional exceptions, really. They're more in the nature of abstention doctrines, in a sense, and can be waived. And this is relevant for the following reason.
So they can or cannot be waived?
They can be waived. And so we will submit that 28-J letter. We just found this actually last night, so it's a very recent development. And our point here is that, Blankness chose to join parties, opposed the motion to sever. They prevailed on that opposition. And certainly, I think that the district court and everybody else was entitled to proceed on the basis of the court's ruling at that time. We have raised, timely at the beginning of the case, and raised here the alternative, the argument with respect to severance, because we had the same. In the end, we have nothing to complain about, as the court pointed out correctly at the beginning of this argument to counsel for appellants. We did not waive, certainly because we have nothing to complain about and nothing to appeal from. And after all, we wanted a federal forum, we have a federal forum, and we received summary judgment. So that being said, we have no, to answer your specific question now with respect to the local controversy, the reason why the court could be argued, the trial court could be argued to have abused its discretion with respect to severance is because there was no legal theory and no factual assertion of concerted action, and no, aside from the fact that they did ask for a lump sum from everybody together, from which I guess one could infer implicitly some sort of joint and several theory, it was never developed, it was never argued below. And I guess they could have eventually done it, but they never did so, and it's not in the record. And so our point is simply, you know, that what there is against my client is simply a set of allegations about its conduct and harm suffered by plaintiffs. It is true that plaintiffs do not identify the specific harms suffered by each, from which source, sort of lump it all together. They lump their own harms together as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. At this time, would counsel for the appellee, Walmart, please introduce themselves on the record in order to begin?
Thank you. My name is Paul Burks, and I represent Walmart. If I could start by addressing the local controversy question that Judge Hamilton has been inquiring about. The local controversy exception states that whether the alleged conduct forms a significant basis for the claims asserted by the proposed plaintiff class. And what it directs you to is the complaint. What is the alleged conduct? What is the conduct alleged in the complaint? And then several circuits have looked at that and they've said, what it's not saying is it trivial or non-trivial. What it's saying is it significant in comparison to the allegations against the other defendants? So when you look at the complaint and then you look at the allegations against both the local and the non-local defendants, there has to be something to distinguish between the two of them for the local defendant's alleged conduct to be more significant than the other. We cited the Eighth Circuit's analysis of that on page 34 of our brief.
Why does it have to be more significant? Why couldn't it just be equal?
Well, in order to understand the word significant, I guess, in the context of the local exception, if they're both the same, then one isn't significant as compared to the other.
They're both significant. We're not talking about primary defendants under the home state.
Right, we're talking about the local controversy exception. And the cases in Kaufman and the Eighth Circuit cases have all said, well, let's look at it as what does significant mean in the context when you have multiple defendants?
And Kaufman says 20% or so is significant enough to apply, right?
In comparison to what the other what was alleged against the other defendants, but when there's nothing that distinguishes among the defendants, when all of the allegations are uniform as against all of the defendants, you can't say that allegations against one are significant and others are not.
It just says significant relief. It's not just, you're not seeking significant relief if you're seeking equal relief from 10 defendants equally.
Well, there's two components to it. There's significant conduct and significant relief.
Okay.
And we are challenging the significant conduct one, not the significant relief one.
That's fine.
I think I'll quote the Eighth Circuit here. Nothing in the complaint distinguishes the conduct of the local defendants from the conduct of the other defendants. So the allegations in the complaint do not satisfy the significant basis requirement. Such collective allegations leave doubt about the comparative significance of the local defendant's conduct, preventing remand under the local controversy exception. And so what's saying there is that they have the burden of showing that the local controversy exception applies. They are the master of their complaint, and they have to make allegations against the local defendants that are significant as compared to what they've alleged against the non-local. That's been consistently how the local controversy exception has been adjudicated. In this case, we have those uniform exceptions.
I don't see it that way, but I understand. We're both a long way from Chicago here. So.
Yeah. Good to see a familiar face sometimes.
You may or may not be that happy about it, but we'll see.
Thank you, Your Honor. And so just to summarize that, and I understand that I've addressed the issue, but it's just to say that we have to look at the complaint, we have to look at the allegations in the complaint, we have to put the burden on the plaintiffs to identify the significant basis, and we have to look at it in the context of all of the defendants. If I could turn to the duty question for a moment, and the question is, where does the first answer to the question of why isn't there a duty not to compete unfairly, the first answer is that if you look at plaintiff's briefs, explained on page 19 of their opening brief, on page 18 of their reply brief. In fact, their motion for partial summary judgment in the trial court said the duty that the defendants had in this case arose from the executive orders. That was their argument, and that continues to be their argument now. To the extent we can just put aside the executive orders and say, well, if Walmart and Costco stayed open when the plaintiffs had to be closed, did they have a duty to be closed under the general language of Regulation 7 that prohibits unfair competition? And the answer to that is no. There's no duty created there. The Iwadea Paint case is distinguishable in the sense that what that case held is that the unfair competition law does not preclude a negligence action if there is a duty. In that case, it was like a price discrimination, a retailer price discrimination issue. And there was a duty that they found for the wholesalers to not engage in misconduct that was harmful to the retailers regarding price discrimination and monopolization. And they said you can bring that as a tort claim. And the fact that it also violates the regulation against fair competition doesn't preclude you from bringing that tort claim. But here you have to identify the duty first. And what is that duty? This duty not to sell when your competition may be closed due to government order. And that's a duty that's never been recognized in the common law.
Why does the duty have to be defined that specifically? It just doesn't strike me the way that tort law generally works. If I bring a negligence claim, I don't have to specify, you know, there had to be a duty to me at this particular time not to do this particular thing. It's a negligence.
I moderately disagree with you on that. I think that duties arise from the relationship between the parties. They're classic duties. They arise from statute or regulation, or they arise in common law. But they don't just arise from a general feeling that you've been done dirty, that you've been wrong in some way. And you have to identify the source of that duty, whether it's a relation. Now, traditionally, competitors don't have a duty to close when another competitor happens to be closed. If they're doing construction down the street and one of Walmart's competitors can't open because of that.
I understand that you define it that specifically. There's no duty, but again, my question was, and so I'm curious to your answer to this. I read the brief to be that they're relying both on the EOs and on the prohibition against unfair competition. So are you saying that below they never raised a duty based on Law 77? That wasn't my understanding, but please tell me if I'm wrong.
I don't know that they never raised it. I think that consistently from the, if you look at the complaint, if you look at their motion for partial summary judgment, if you look at their brief on page 19 and 18, I think what they're arguing is that the unfair competition is the violation of the executive orders. But it's separate and apart from if we concede that Walmart complied with the executive orders, then there's no basis of duty in their argument. Their argument is that the executive orders barred you from selling certain things, but you sold them, and that violated the duty, and that became unfair competition. So I don't think their argument is the self-standing unfair competition. And I do think that the court below was correct that you're suggesting I'm defining it too narrowly, but I think that a nebulous duty to just not compete unfairly is not the kind of thing that can be enforced in tort law in this circumstance. I think the duty has to be more specific than that. The duty they're alleging is a duty not to sell because we were closed. That is the duty that they're alleging, and that duty has never existed in the common law. It's never existed in the common law, and it only arises if the executive orders require it, and the executive orders didn't require it. If I could use my extra time to just address the question of causation, because I think that is an alternative grounds to affirm the summary judgment below. And I think the district court got it right when he said that their argument isn't just a lost sales argument. It's that we lost sales and we would have recouped them had Walmart and Costco not made those sales during that time. And in order to do that, they really had the burden of producing evidence, both of which sales they would have made during the time that they were being forced to close by the government orders. And then, I'm sorry, I'm out of time.
Just finish your thought.
Certainly. And they didn't produce any evidence on that question of causation. They just generally alleged $500 million of damages. They did not identify the products that Walmart sold that they did not sell, and they did not identify, they did not produce any evidence that would have suggested that those sales would have been recouped after the executive orders had expired. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. At this time, counsel for the appellant has a 3-minute rebuttal. Please reintroduce yourself on the record.
Your Honors, again, Gretchen Varela on behalf of appellants. I just want to address briefly regarding the motion for summary judgment. I invite this court to not be fooled by the statements of Costco and Walmart. It is undisputed that under the laws of Puerto Rico, Act 77, there is and imposes upon all retailers in Puerto Rico an affirmative duty to refrain from engaging in unfair competition. Also, I want to address Brother Counsel's comments regarding the Office of Anti-Monopolistic Agency in Puerto Rico, stating that it can enforce Act 77. That has been challenged in Puerto Rico, and in the Aguadilla case, the Puerto Rico appellate court decided that the courts can has jurisdiction to oversee this type of cases. Going to the comment regarding that the local controversy, that this jurisdiction has discretion, it does not. It is, as Judge Hamilton may know from his previous decision, the local controversy mandates, it is obligatory to abstain from the cases where the local controversy exception applies. In fact, the plain language of CAFA suggests that it says, a district court shall, not may, shall. Also, regarding the, it must be stressed that there are different allegations made against Walmart. First, paragraph 51 of the amended complaint, this is in page 50 of the appendix, additional allegations were made against Walmart. Specifically, it states that Walmart's top executive made expressions to the press, indicating that they weren't, that it was not going to engage in the conduct that they eventually engaged in it. And this is important because when this court must assume that all defendants are liable, and this means that Walmart had a greater potential liability because this allegation was pursued under the third cause of action, equity. Also, at paragraph 56, it was alleged additional allegations against two local defendants, Costco and Walmart, that violated executive order number 2020-057. I just want to finish my thought, Your Honors, if I may. So the local controversy exception does not require that the local defendant's conduct be the most significant conduct or that it predominates over the claims of the diverse defendants. This is Walsh versus Defenders in the Third Circuit. So we understand that this case, court does not have jurisdiction and the case should be remanded. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes argument in this case.